Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program from Bonn, Germany, this Tuesday, the 6th of December 2016. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the Social Media Desk.
In today's program, Ghana's opposition candidate Nana Akufo-Addo tells DW ahead of the polls tomorrow why his country needs change.
All around, we're going through moments of great difficulty. And it's clear to me that the country needs new people and a new direction. And I believe that that is what the Ghanaian people are after.
Former child soldier turned warlord Dominic Ongwen pleaded not guilty at the ICC on Tuesday to crimes committed by the LRA rebel group in northern Uganda. Could this case bolster the reputation of international justice in Africa?
It's a case that, because of the atrocities are alleged to have committed by the defendant, and these are so serious when you read the prosecutor's case, that this is, for the ICC, exactly the type of individual that needs to be brought to justice.
And on the social media front, we will be looking at what many of you have been saying on Twitter and Facebook regarding the trial of Ongwen and the Ghana Elections Day that is gaining momentum as the clock ticks away.
Stay with us for all this and more, but let's listen to what is happening around the world.
I'm Christina Krippal with the DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said today at the start of her Conservative Christian Democrats Party conference that she was determined to prevent a repeat of last year's huge migrant influx. She said that not all of the 890,000 refugees who arrived in 2015 would be able to stay and that about a third would have to return to their home countries. She also announced plans for a ban on the burqa in Germany.
Das heißt auch, dass in der zwischenmenschlichen Kommunikation, die
bei we show our face when we communicate. That is why the full veil must be banned wherever that is legally possible.
Nicht angebracht, sie sollte verboten sein, wo immer das rechtlich möglich ist.
The announcement was well received by a party which has been increasingly critical of Merkel's liberal handling of the refugee crisis. Merkel was re-elected as the party's chair and will lead the Christian Democrats into legislative elections in 2017. The German Constitutional Court on Tuesday ruled that German energy companies are entitled to compensation for the government's 2011 decision to shut down all 70 nuclear power plants by June 2018. Originally, the phase-out had been scheduled to last until 2022, but in the wake of Japan's Fukushima meltdown, Chancellor Merkel sped up the switch to greener energy. The court did not say how much compensation the companies are entitled to, stressing only that it should be adequate, thereby seemingly ruling out the payment of 19 billion euros in losses claimed by the companies. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights accused Turkish troops of deliberately killing Syrian civilians trying to flee conflict and cross the border to safety. The monitoring group said the total number of dead on the frontier had risen to 163, including 31 children. Ugandan warlord Dominic Ongwen went on trial on the International Criminal Court, ICC, in The Hague in the Netherlands on Tuesday. He faces 70 charges.
Count 1, attacks against the civilian population as such as a war crime on or about 10 October 2003 at or near Pajule IDP camp. Count 2, murder as a crime against humanity.
Ongwen, a senior commander in the Lord's Resistance Army, pleaded not guilty on all counts. He argued that he himself was a victim, having been abducted by the LRA as a teenager. The United Nations mission in the Democratic Republic of the Congo is bracing for violence ahead of the official end of President Joseph Kabila's term on December 20th, amid moves to extend the leader's mandate. In an address to the Security Council, which was holding talks on the country after at least 31 people died in weekend clashes, UN Special Representative to the DRC, Maman Sambo-Sidiku, spoke of a sense of apprehension in the country. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Krippal.
Ghanaians will be heading to the polls to elect their new leader and members of parliament. The main contenders for the presidency are incumbent John Mahama and the main opposition leader Nana Akufo-Addo, who has accused the ruling party of fomenting violence as police turn a blind eye, casting doubt on the country's reputation as a beacon of democracy in Africa. In an exclusive interview with DW's Adrian Krish, he emphasized why his country needs change.
The reason why the country needs change is very simple. The economy of our country has gone into a poor shape under the management of the president and his party. And there's a lot of difficulties for our people. There's no work for a lot of the young people. And they're looking for a new direction that will solve some of these basic problems that they have. Social services are in crisis in our country. Our health system is in crisis. So is our educational system. So all around, we're going through moments of great difficulty. And it's clear to me that the country needs new people and a new direction. And I believe that that is what the Ghanaian people are after.
A lot of your young supporters I talked to actually said they're going to vote for you because you promised to create jobs. How are you going to do that?
We're going to strengthen the economy. We're going to grow the economy. We're going to create jobs in the same way as jobs are created all over the world, like in Germany, everywhere. Expand the economy, grow the economy, put in measures, policies that would allow that to happen. And when we expand the economy, strengthen Ghanaian enterprise and the private sector, we believe that is the way forward for creating jobs. And we believe we can do this in a relatively short period of time. We can turn around the economy in a relatively short period of time. We intend to devote a lot of our energy also to reviving Ghanaian agriculture and productivity. And we believe that is also an avenue for creating a lot of jobs.
Well, this is going to be quite an expensive process. And as far as I understand, money-wise, it does not look too good for Ghana right now. Where are you taking the funds from?
We're going to grow the economy. We're going to put in measures that are going to strengthen the private sector to be able, and then also bring discipline in our public accounts. I think that these two measures are ways of increasing the volume of money in the system, reducing the ratio of our debt to our GDP, and opening up the economy.
Ghana's opposition leader Nana Akufo-Addo speaking to DW's Adrian Krish. Now to China, where Human Rights Watch says Communist Party officials are being subjected to torture as part of the government's crackdown on corruption within the party. Our reporter Lovde Wright has more.
The study by Human Rights Watch focuses on China's parallel justice system for members of the country's ruling Communist Party. Under what's known as Shangui, party members can be detained and interrogated outside of the regular criminal justice system. According to the report, torture, solitary confinement and forced confessions are being used as part of the Shangui system, which is being employed in President Xi Jinping's war on corruption. Rights campaigners say this particular aspect of the crackdown should be abolished. Human Rights Watch found reports of 11 people who had died while being held under Shangui between 2010 and 2015, but it's not clear whether those deaths were a result of mistreatment or suicide. Although combating corruption is a popular policy in China, Shangui is a secretive practice and it's not covered by legal provisions put in place to promote transparency.
Loved it right with that short report. Former child soldier turned warlord Dominic Ongwen pleaded not guilty this Tuesday to crimes committed by the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA, a rebel group. The group was formed by Joseph Kony and it has terrorized parts of northern Uganda and neighboring countries since the late 1980s, killing thousands and displacing many more. Ongwen is accused of carrying out massacres, rapes, mutilations and abductions. But as an ex-child soldier, he has been described as a victim as well as perpetrator of international crimes. The LRA has been widely condemned for its brutality, but this is the first time that an LRA commander has faced trial. So how challenging was it to collect witness testimony, bearing in mind that the LRA's brutality? A question I put to Mark Ellis, Executive Director at the International Bar Association in London.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. And of course, when the ICC set out its indictments, it set out its indictments against five individuals, including Joseph Kony. This is the first of those five that have come to the court. The other three have passed away. So there's a real problem about witnesses that would be willing to testify against this individual. But it's interesting also to see in the pretrial confirmation hearing, the prosecutor has clearly spent considerable time putting together the case against the defendant. And there are a number of witnesses who testified in the pretrial chamber process and will undoubtedly be part of the trial process. So the prosecutor seems to have gotten over that hurdle because the pretrial chamber decided that the prosecutor had set forth sufficient grounds to substantiate the allegations, and therefore the trial continues.
Ongwen is accused of committing atrocities in northern Uganda, and we know that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has been critical of the ICC. Now, will his trial help boost the ICC's reputation in Africa, which has been under attack recently?
Yeah, this will be an interesting process here because you're absolutely right. The ICC is under significant attack by a number of countries in Africa, and particularly by the African Union. So in many ways, its credibility, its legitimacy is at stake right now. So I think this is going to be a very important case. And it's a case that because of the atrocities are alleged to have committed by the defendant, and these are so serious when you read the prosecutor's case, that this is, for the ICC, exactly the type of individual that needs to be brought to justice. And remember, it was Uganda who referred the case, the situation, to the court.
Let's turn to Joseph Kony himself, the elusive leader of the LRA. He's not in the dock, but one of his subordinates. How important is it that Kony stands trial at the ICC one day?
Well, you know, that's the real, I think, injustice about this. You have Mr. Ongwen, who is in trial. He was a child soldier in the very earlier days, directly under Joseph Kony. We know that there's probably over 30,000 children that have been brought into the LRA and indoctrinated as child soldiers. And this is at the direct leadership of Joseph Kony. Joseph Kony needs to be brought to justice. That's the most important case in regards to Uganda and in regards to the ICC. It doesn't diminish what Mr. Ongwen has, the crimes that he's alleged to have committed. They're very serious, and if he's found guilty of those crimes, he should be sentenced and held to account. But all of these crimes, the atrocities are committed, all of them go back to Joseph Kony.
I was speaking to Mark Ellis, Executive Director at the International Bar Association in London. I'm now joined by my colleague Wanjiku Maura from the Social Media Desk. Wanjiku, tell me what is trending now.
Well, one of the trending topics in Ghana has been pause for peace, where Ghanaians are taking to Twitter to call for peace ahead of tomorrow's elections.
All right, and how have they been doing that?
Well, they have been posting photos of themselves with a message to their fellow Ghanaians. A Supreme says, Ghana is surrounded by Francophone countries. You cannot speak nor understand French. Plus, you don't even have a passport. My brother, vote for peace. Afua Kwansima says, Ghana is our country. We just need peace and justice in tomorrow's election. Efo Edem has posted a picture of his voter's card and says, this is all I have. No passport, nowhere to run. I can't even run to Togo. I stand for peace. But not all of them are too optimistic about this online campaign.
What else are they saying then?
Kofi Toku, for example, is saying, peace, peace, but nobody is talking about justice. We want transparency, free and fair elections. Amate in Cape Coast, Ghana, says, we are one people and after we will still meet and sip our tin-ton-tin brews. Twitter King says, Chale, let's vote in peace so that we can go to the stadium all the time.
So interesting. Continue. Are there more tweets, please?
Yes, there are. Game Glean says, these foreign media are just scanning through violent-prone areas to report ill about us. Let's put them to shame once and for all.
Yes, indeed. We wish the Ghanaians all the best in tomorrow's election. In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program, straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Welcome to the program. In the next 15 minutes here at Africa Link, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe, in his State of Nation address, commends Zimbabweans for showing resilience.
Let me conclude by paying tribute to our peace-loving people who have endured all manner of economic hardships.
We'll also be reading more of your comments on the Ongwen's ICC trial.
And we'll be hearing how sniffer dogs in Tanzania are being used to track down poachers. But first, let's go to Zimbabwe, where President Robert Mugabe has been giving his State of Nation address at a time when the country is in a political and economic tailspin, characterized by serious cash shortages, company closures, and job losses, among other shortcomings. In his address, Mugabe said his country imported more than 300,000 tons of maize after the country was hit by a devastating drought. For more on his speech to the country's General Assembly, I spoke to DW's privileged Mushanri in Harare.
Today, President Mugabe addressed the National Assembly and the Senate in his State of the Nation address. The major things that could be picked out of the State of the Nation address is the fact that he has been emphasizing the ease of doing business to attract foreign direct investment. And then also, he thanked Zimbabweans for being resilient to economic challenges, but did not pay attention to some of the issues that Zimbabweans are facing every day.
Did he address the cash crisis, which has led to the introduction of bonds?
People thought that he was going to address the issue of cash shortages and speak to the things that people are facing every day. Right now, government has introduced the bond notes currency, but he did not even allude to anything to do with that. And rather, he only thanked the Zimbabweans for being resilient, and you know, this is what he had to say.
Let me conclude by paying tribute to our peace-loving people who have endured all manner of economic hardships since we embarked on the historic land reform program. I wish to commend them for their resilience and urge them to cherish the peace and tranquility that continues to be the envy of many. Let us continue to find national pride in our core values of unity, hard work, and freedom.
That was President Robert Mugabe. And how have Zimbabweans reacted to the president's speech?
Speaking to some ordinary Zimbabweans, you know, after the presentation of the speech, you know, some were praising him, but some they were left shell-shocked because they were saying that his speech is empty of giving direction to the nation, because it has not even addressed the issues they thought that were going to be addressed, especially to do with the economy and even how the nation is going to pick direction in the coming year.
As we earlier mentioned at the beginning of this story, the president said that the country imported 300,000 tons of maize to address the issue of the food crisis. Now, Privilege, what can you tell us about the food crisis in the country at the moment?
You find that in the provinces that were hardest hit by the El Nino-induced drought, there is dire need of food aid until we get the next harvest. If we get the country gets good rains around April, so they still need to mobilize a lot of funds to get food aid into the country through maybe development partners and government itself.
Privilege Mushanri in Harare.
Africa on the move.
Police in Tanzania have set up a program together with the African Wildlife Foundation to track down poachers smuggling horns and skins with the help of sniffer dogs. It is not the first attempt to train dogs to take on this task, but previous programs have failed because handlers were not properly trained on how to treat the dogs as pets and partners instead of mere tools. This report by Lucy Taylor-Katusha is now presented by Emma Wallace.
When it comes to finding ivory quickly, no one can beat Diva the sniffer dog. She's the most efficient weapon in the fight against the illegal trade in ivory. She can sniff out the ivory hidden by her trainers in no time. The dogs are trained by the African Wildlife Foundation. It took a couple of weeks before Diva and her trainer, William Mariga, formed a working team. It was worth the effort, says Mariga.
It's an amazing experience to learn how to treat with dogs. Relationship, the love between me and my dog. I feel connected with my dog and I'm happy. I'm just happy.
But this is about so much more than friendship between people and dogs. Poaching and wildlife smuggling threaten a high number of species, in particular rhinos and elephants. Tanzania lost 60% of its elephant population in the years from 2009 to 2014. Thousands of tons of contraband ivory are shipped to Asia. The government of Kenya has also stepped up the fight against the smugglers, following a promise by President Uhuru Kenyatta.
We are committed to combating the menace robustly and persistently until we dismantle the entire vile economy. Today, I once again assure the international community that Kenya's resolve to preserve humanity's shared heritage in wildlife is there.
The 15 dog handlers in the making have also declared war on the poachers. After months of training in northern Tanzania, they're about to graduate. The project and the dog's care are funded by the African Wildlife Foundation. The organization's president, Patrick Bergen, says the course is meant to enable the locals to protect their own resources.
Africa is experiencing a second great wave of poaching. There was a huge wave of poaching in the 70s and 80s, and Africa lost more than half of its elephants, never to recover again. We're in the midst of another poaching crisis, and we have to find all the different ways to intervene and to disrupt the trade and to bring it to a halt.
Valued at $20 billion, trafficking in endangered species is the fourth most important organized criminal activity in the world, after drugs, weapons, and human trafficking. Mariga and Diva are about to take up their job in Kenya's port of Mombasa to help fight this scourge. All the other newly minted dog trainers and their partners will follow them to the hotspots of ivory smuggling along the coast.
As the pioneers of this initiative, we hope to curb the wildlife crime, illegal wildlife trafficking. We are going to use our efforts the way possible, our efforts in collaboration with our superiors. I'm sure we will achieve a lot.
Some 30,000 elephants are killed every year in Africa for their tusks. There are only approximately 500,000 of the grey giants left. At this rate, the African elephant will be extinct by 2025. Diva and Mariga have a tough and dangerous job ahead, fighting the poachers and smugglers. It looks like they're set to be partners for as long as they can.
A report by Lucy Taylor Kajusha.
And you can check out our Facebook page for an interesting video of a young 16-year-old girl keen to save the environment.
Focus Europe.
Now, children in Spain have been on homework strike. Students in 12,000 schools across the country were asked to lay down their pens by a parents' association. It's calling for reform of the education system and says children have far too much homework. Lauren Freya has more from Madrid.
Hola, Camilo. Soy Lauren. Encantada.
Camilo Hene invites me into his flat where he lives with his three children in a leafy northern suburb of Madrid. At the dining table, Camilo's 14-year-old daughter, Clara, is busy with homework.
Often we're sitting down to eat dinner and I have to tell her to put away the books. It's cutting into our family time.
Keep in mind that Spaniards sit down to dinner around 10 p.m., Clara often resumes homework after that. She says she gets about 3 hours of homework a day and double that on weekends. 65% of Spanish teens report being stressed about the amount of homework they get, and even a third of 11-year-olds say the same. Clara is among millions of Spanish students holding a homework strike, refusing to do homework on weekends. Her father, Camilo, a member of a national parents association, is the one who actually suggested it to her.
El problema es que al final todos queremos.
The problem is, in the end, we all want our children to succeed. So this is complicated, but this is worth it, to draw attention to flaws in our system.
Marius Fullana is an astrophysicist, a father of two, and a spokesman for the Association of Parents in 12,000 school systems across Spain, which called this homework strike.
We think that the educational system is ancient. It dedicates a lot of time in memorization and things that maybe some years ago would be the way to do. But nowadays, the world has changed.
He says it's difficult to gauge how many children across Spain have taken part in the strike. Probably at least half, he says. Some teachers have objected, but many others have been sympathetic and stopped assigning homework on weekends.
No, I think that it's much broader than just homework. Why? Because of working schedules. They're really not family friendly.
Education expert Catherine Lecuyer is author of a best-selling book in Spain called The Wonder Approach to Learning.
Some educators, they tend to conceive education as more is better, more activities, more homework, more hours, you know, of school, so more everything. And it's not true, because what we have to look for is, you know, quality.
Studies show Finland and South Korea have the highest student performances and some of the highest teacher salaries, but some of the lowest levels of homework. In a Madrid schoolyard, parents and caregivers gather to pick up their children on a Friday afternoon. They'll be watching to see how weighed down the kids' backpacks are with homework.
Lauren Freya in Madrid. Now, we are back to you, Wanjiku, and what do you have more for us?
Well, I've been monitoring the interview we covered with the Gambia incoming president, and the conversation is still ongoing.
Okay.
Asa Henry says, it must be a very proud moment to be Gambian. I pray my Cameroon to be transformed soon as well. Congratulations to all Gambians for the good fight. Meanwhile, Kamara Augustine is saying, this looks like the African uprising continuation. After Nigeria, now is the Gambia. Which country is next in line is anybody's guess. But one thing is clear, the voice of the people is the voice of God. We also have a comment from Emmanuel Desire, who says, people are not born dictators, but they become dictators. And generally, the West grooms dictators in Africa. I am not excited. I will wait to see what this new leader will become. This is what Emmanuel is saying.
Okay, Emmanuel sounds cautiously optimistic. What else do you have?
We also have the ICC trial of Dominic Ongwen, and Musa Zuberi Kumbaye from Chanika, Dar es Salaam, says that the trial is important. Every wrongdoer should be answerable for their mistakes. Shukuru Mikato Bosco from Kalemi in DRC says, what someone sows is what they reap. Therefore, the law should be followed strictly if Dominic Ongwen is found guilty.
Yeah, interesting comments there. I mean, the trial just began today. We shall see. More comments will still be coming in.
Yes, indeed. And we also have a video on our Facebook on a young environmentalist from Tanzania who's only 16 years old. And this girl is not just a student, but she's also advocating for environment protection. And Betoni Mandala, Adam from Beya says, in Tanzania, says, I am very proud of her. She's the true symbol of naturalism.
Remember, we still welcome your comments on these topics and all the topics we cover here at Africa Link. All you have to do is to go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and send your comments on the topics. I can see one comment from TZ says, where about, you know, the ICC? Well, the guy is sulking, but we should remember that the face doesn't always show what's in the heart. The trial will determine if the allegations are indeed true or not. More comments are still coming in about Ongwen, but we don't have so much time about it. And I'm afraid we'll leave it at that. But as always, visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page.
Thanks for keeping us company. Until tomorrow, same time, take care and goodbye.